service.
Christian. Mother. Wife.
Air Force veteran.
Gun rights advocate.
This is Stacy on the Right. Here's your host, Stacy Washington.
Welcome. Thank you for being here. I'm so glad to welcome our next guest into the show. She is just, she's fabulous. And I love it when she stops by. I don't know why, but I love it when it's a Friday night because she just ends our week off right with her knowledge and expertise and experience. And, of course, one of my favorite professions because my dad was a military policeman and then a policeman in the private sector. I love police, and I know that they're not perfect, but they certainly do an amazing service for us here in our country. And so Sergeant Betsy Brantner-Smith, retired, is a spokesperson for the National Police Association. Their website is nationalpolice.org, nationalpolice.org. Welcome, Betsy. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Stacy, for having me, and happy Friday.
Happy Friday. It's so good. And now, I think I know often when you come on, it's dire. It's, you know, we have difficult things to discuss. But one of our topics for tonight, to me, is a bit of a win for law and order. And that is that we have a former Broward County Sheriff's Deputy, Scott Peterson, who's actually on trial for his refusal or failure to respond to an active shooter within a public school that he was literally paid to patrol and to protect. Talk to us about that case.
Well, as everyone remembers, about 5 years ago, the Parkland school shooting, a young man named Nicholas Cruz, who has a long, long history of mental illness and violent behavior. We can get into that at some point. But he came to the school and he shot 14 students and three adults. And the school resource officer there, Scott Peterson, who had been there quite some time, knew the school very well. He was attached to the sheriff's department. And he did not go in, and there was, you know, there's lots of video photos, you know, you can see what he was doing. And Stacy, he says he didn't go in because at first he thought it was a sniper, you know, somebody from up high. Then he said he couldn't tell where the shots were coming from. And he is the first police officer to be charged with this failure to run toward the shots, failure to really do his job and hunt this shooter, just like we saw the officers in Nashville do and the officers in Louisville do and police officers throughout this nation. We run toward the shots, you know, Allen, Texas. Scott Peterson didn't do that. He took cover, waited, and there was the response was not optimal. So now their jury selection is going on, and we're going to see what happens. He's been charged with failure to protect both adults and, of course, juveniles, child neglect, which is multiple felonies. So it's going to be an interesting case to watch.
It is. And so do you think this case will have any outgrowth of ramifications for the Uvalde officers who also apparently, it appears, they failed to respond?
Well, you know, it may certainly have that. You know, the Supreme Court has ruled in multiple cases that police officers do not have an individual duty to protect. Now, I want people to know what that means is not that we're not here to protect you, but as an individual, if a police officer doesn't get to your house on time when you call 911, or there was a case where a domestic violence victim was hurt, even though the police had pledged to protect her, that's not what is happening in this case. In this case, Scott Peterson did not do what should have been tactically expedient. And I'll tell you, Stacey, a couple of things. One, within days of this happening, my husband and Dave is a police trainer as well, we talked to one of the active shooter trainers for the Broward County Sheriff's Department. And, you know, we were able to discuss their training in its entirety. It was a very good training. These officers, including Scott Peterson, had presumably had this training, and they didn't follow the training. The other thing I want people to understand is this. There's been a lot of talk in the last 3 years that, A, we can't have dangerous armed police officers near children in schools. We've heard a lot of that from the anti-cop crowd. We've also heard a lot of talk that we don't want warrior cops. Now, what is a warrior cop? A warrior cop is not someone who dehumanizes the citizens they serve. It's not somebody who is going to be brutal. A warrior cop, the ethos, we call it, the habits of a warrior cop, are duty, honor, courage, loyalty, strength, and selfless service. I think that's what everybody wants in their cops. That's certainly what you want in your school resource officer. So this is a good case to for people to look at and say, do I want a cop that's going to run toward the shots, or do I want a cop who's going to wait? Do I want maybe not even have the cops near the school? Scott Peterson was in that school. So there's a lot to digest here, and there's a lot that we really want people to think about. What do you want in your cops? And that goes for Uvalde as well.
Yeah, and I got to say, Betsy, the Uvalde officers, if the reporting is accurate, you know, we've all heard about the Supreme Court case that said, you know, cops don't have a duty to protect you. You know, they're an investigatory arm of, you know, civil government. But when an officer is on the scene and responding specifically for an active shooter, so they respond, but then they don't go in, or they're already there because they're a school resource officer and they don't do the duties that they've been trained for, I think that's when, you know, people draw a line and they're like, yeah, you know, we know that cops don't have a duty to protect and serve, but if they're already on the scene or they're responding because, you know, there was a 911 call saying there's a shooter here, I think people are drawing a difference between the scenario that the Supreme Court described and what's happening at these schools in these two specific instances.
And you're absolutely right. And when we look at the Parkland case, you know, and this is what Scott Peterson is presumably going to tell the jury. He said, I couldn't tell where the shots were coming from. I didn't know where the gunman was. And that could be reasonably assumed to be true. We have to remember, we're all looking at this case with hindsight bias. In other words, we know the end of the story. We know where Nicholas Cruz was in that school. We know what he was doing. Scott Peterson presumably did not. I'll be honest, I find the Uvalde case much more egregious than I do the Parkland case. Uvalde was, 90 minutes? We had this crowd of police officers standing around in what it can only be described as a case of contagious non-fire or, you know, contagious inaction. In other words, every officer that arrived at Uvalde saw all these other officers standing around. There was no leadership, no one telling them what to do, and that's the most egregious part of that. But officer after officer, up to 400 or so, arrived. And finally, it takes a team of, I believe it was five officers from differing agencies to finally say, this is enough. And they did what we're supposed to do in the beginning. The minute we arrive on scene, we are to form an ad hoc team if there's two of us or more. Otherwise, we go in alone, we run toward the shots, and we stop that shooter. So I'm sure there's a lot of Uvalde police officers that are going to be watching the Scott Peterson case in Florida and wondering what's going to happen to them. And I believe the first to be potentially indicted in Uvalde should be the leadership.
Wow. So what does that look like? Because I think a lot of people agree with you, but what is the, starting with the leadership, what would that look like?
Well, I guess, you know, and again, I'm not an attorney, I'm just a cop. But the chief of police, who went in ill-prepared, you know, he didn't even have his radio with him, he did not take significant steps to stop that shooter. And then when you had the first two police officers that approached that door with a shield, they get shot at, and they actually, they get hit, they get grazed, and they backed off. And so what should have happened tactically in that situation is once those officers, you know, get hit, more officers should go around them. And we are to, if they're not going to go in because they've been shot, they've been grazed, then we utilize the shield they had. We take whatever weapons that we have available, and we go in. I mean, it was a very fluid situation, but there really is no excuse for that 90 minutes. There just is no excuse to that. And the chief called it a hostage situation. And now, again, in his defense, if he thought it was a hostage situation, then telling everybody to stand down would be the right call if he knew it was a hostage situation. But I think the lack of communication, the lack of use of proper tactics is problematic. Is it criminal? I don't know. Is what Scott Peterson did or didn't do criminal? We're going to find that out from the jury. And I am not a big proponent for criminally charging police officers for making mistakes. So again, we've got to go back to, why are police officers hesitating? And because we see them hesitate in some situations, don't hesitate in others. Scott Peterson worked for Sheriff Israel, who turned out to be a rather incompetent sheriff. He was incredibly partisan. He encouraged the Promise Program, if everybody remembers that, where Nicholas Cruz, the shooter, really should have never been at that school in the first place. He either should have been in an institution or at a special school. But that Promise Program that came from Chicago, came from the Obama administration, said that kids deserve, and Nicholas Cruz was, I believe he was 18 by the time he committed this crime. The young people deserve many, 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 many chances. Sometimes that's true. In the case of Nicholas Cruz, he had been violent since grade school and probably should not have been in school with others. So again, I want people to think about what kind of policies are your legislators, including your sheriff, including your school board, including your superintendent, hired by the school board that you elect, what kind of policies are they ushering in that might be a danger to your child, including violent fellow students on your campus, school resource officers who are unarmed, who are maybe not there at all, who are not properly trained? It all comes back to parents need to pay attention, and we need to understand what is happening in our schools so that these situations do not happen.
I love how specific you are here in delineating the differences between these situations. And I have to say thank you again for what you're doing to educate us on the story and the ramifications, because this doesn't end here. The Broward County Sheriff's Deputy Scott Peterson, his case, it's not the end of it. It's the beginning of some different kinds of training policies, some different kinds of policies for officers who are, you know, school resource officers. It's going to be a lot of reforms that are going to be going on in areas where people really want to see change. So one more quick story here. There's been an arrest of three Stop Cop City officers for financial crimes. Tell us about this story.
Yeah, so sometimes you have to get, just like we got Al Capone in Chicago, you have to get people through other means. Everybody's heard about Cop City, which is the large police training facility that is being built outside of Atlanta, Georgia. Everybody wants better trained cops. Again, we've been hearing that since 2014, and especially since 2020. So the Cobb City protesters have been, since 2022, trying to stop this multi-acre police training facility outside of Atlanta, Georgia. And over 40 Antifa members have been arrested, including somebody from the Southern Poverty Law Center. But just recently, three members of they claim to be Antifa members. They run a foundation called Network for Strong Communities, which basically collects funds for the Atlanta Solidarity Fund, which is an organization that bails out violent protesters. And so they are the ones who have bailed out the Cop City protesters, and it turns out that they are running a scam charity. So they have been charged with basically RICO statute kind of things. You know, they're kind of like what's happening with Black Lives Matter is they're collecting money and it's not going to appropriate charitable things. It's just going to a bail fund and a legal representation fund, and they're not doing it according to Georgia law. So these three have been arrested. A search warrant has been served on the home that they share, and they have been accused of charity fraud and money laundering. So I think that's an interesting way to go after these protesters. Let's not forget, a state trooper got shot in these protests and was forced to kill one of the protesters who shot the trooper in the arm. And they are trying to stop the facility from being built. It's still being built. It's going to open probably at the end of this year or early next year. And it's going to provide state-of-the-art training facilities for Georgia law enforcement. Everyone wants better-trained cops. I also think it will help to recruit police officers to the area because this is going to, you know, better training helps raise morale. If you feel confident and competent at your job, you're able to get really good quality training, you're going to be able to recruit more people. So this is a win for Georgia law enforcement, and hopefully this is putting a stake in the heart, metaphorically, of these Cobb City protests.
So I got to tell you, last I heard, we want better trained cops. We want better trained police. We want the police to have better training. Boy, if I heard that one more time, right, they just keep on saying it. And now you have this police training center, state of the art. It will actually give officers, basically they'll be ironclad. You know, their behavior is well within the training parameters. That's what we want. That's what the protesters said they wanted. But this just goes to show you, Betsy, that they don't have a genuine bone in their bodies. They honestly don't mean anything that they say unless they're saying they want to defund the police and make crime more rampant and give criminals an opportunity to reoffend again and again and again. When they say that stuff, that's true, but the rest of it's a pack of lies.
Well, you're absolutely right. And what we appreciate about Georgia law enforcement is they don't tolerate this. They don't tolerate these violent protests. You know, you can have a peaceful protest all you want, and law enforcement will protect you. But Georgia law enforcement from the very beginning has said absolutely not. You cannot, because again, these protests have been violent from the start, starting in 2022 with Molotov cocktails and setting fire to police vehicles. And Georgia law enforcement has said, oh, hell no. We're not going to tolerate this. And the people of Georgia deserve well-trained cops, and the cops deserve a state-of-the-art facility. Because I've trained out there before, and the facility they're replacing, you know, it's old, it's very dated. And understand that about half of the money for this training facility is coming from private funds. This is only half of it's taxpayer dollars. The Atlanta Police Foundation is a private organization that has been working on this in a bipartisan manner. This is not some, you know, right-wing, hey, we're going to spend bazillions of dollars teaching cops to be snipers. These cops are going to learn everything from traffic stops to de-escalation training to responding appropriately to school shootings and active shooters, Stacey. This is a much-needed facility. The community wants it, and a lot of these protesters that come, they don't even live in Georgia.
Right, bust in. They're AstroTurf protesters.
Absolutely. And, you know, and they just, they want, you know, and they talk about everything from combating climate change, because this is, this facility is going to be kind of in the woods. You know, they love to talk about that. And then they talk about, you know, their protests. I watched a bunch of the videotapes, they're not terribly well informed about where the money is coming and things like that. It's just a regional temper tantrum, because they don't want the police officers to be well trained. And Georgia law enforcement, and frankly, the community surrounding that area, they're not tolerating it. The community wants the facility as well. And again, it's through a bipartisan effort. So this is not a partisan issue in the very least. This is a safety issue.
It's a safety issue. And so, surprise, surprise, the organized left protest arm, they're on the wrong side of it. But, you know, I love Georgia. I love the energy that they have there for, you know, not backing down. So they set it on fire. They're like, yep, but we're going to remain on schedule. So, you know, the fire remediation, something we can handle. And they're still putting this thing together. And it's going to open. And they're going to have great training. And the people there want it. And that's what's most important to me, Betsy. If the voters and taxpayers want their officers trained and they want the state-of-the-art center and they're funding it with taxpayer dollars, these protesters have no say, because they're citizens too. If they live there, they have a say in the process because they can vote, they can advocate. Burning it down is just the act of criminals, and they should be prosecuted for that. And I'm sure they're working on figuring out who did that and bringing them to justice. Sergeant Betsy Brantner Smith, retired. Thank you so much for being a spokesperson over at the National Police Association and for joining us on the show on a Friday night. Happy weekend.